The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Twin Peak, we're not out of the woods yet as restrictions retained for some sectors. COVID certs will still be required for entry to gigs, restaurants, pubs and clubs. Antigen tests in the post for asymptomatic close contacts. And booster shots for over 60s, but not healthcare workers. All that and more on tonight's Late Debate. And joining us in studio tonight to debate all of that, we have Senator Pauline O'Reilly, Green Party spokesperson on education and higher education, Pather Tobin, leader of AINTHU and TD for Meath West, Darren O'Rourke, Sinn Féin spokesperson on climate action, communications, networks and transport, and TD for Meath East, and Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Now, we want to hear from you as well, so get in touch. You can text us on 51551, email us on latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebate_RTE. Now, it's been a long day. Let's have a listen to this.
What traditionally happens in a nightclub will continue to happen in a nightclub. Obviously, people will be able to dance in a nightclub, of course.
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. Because your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine.
See? The vaccination programme and the use of COVID passes is how we have been able to open the hospitality sector so far. To stay open, we need everyone to enforce and respect the rules.
We can go if we want to. Night is young and so am I. And we can dress real neat from our hearts to our feet and surprise them with a victory cry.
I do think that that needs to be looked at, because you have a situation whereby on the one hand you can you can stand up in your seat or you can go to the dance floor and have a dance, and you can't if you're in a pub, if there's a small dance floor in the pub.
We can dance, we can dance, everybody look at your hands.
We thought that by this 22nd of October we'd have over 90% of people over 16 fully vaccinated and we'd be past the peak of the Delta wave. While we do now have over 90% of people over 16 fully vaccinated, we're not past the peak of the Delta wave. Indeed, we're most likely experiencing a twin peak.
Yes, indeed, you can dance if you want to, but only if you're in a nightclub. Tánaiste Dlí of Radcar said today that the absolute easiest thing to do is to shut down the country, and the second easiest thing to do is to open up fully. Everything in between is full of anomalies, full of complications, and we know that by now. Aoife Moore, it's complicated.
It's very complicated, but sure, what isn't these days?
So can you clear up any of these confusions for us?
I wish. So what we heard today was that nightclubs can reopen on Friday as planned. However, there will be some changes. So you will have to be fully vaccinated to go to a nightclub. You will have to wear a mask if you're going to the toilet. And if you're sitting down but you're not eating or you're not drinking, but you don't have to wear a mask when you're dancing on the dance floor. And it's not exactly clear whether you can dance up to the bar and order a drink or you can just dance on the dance floor and dance back to your seat. It wasn't ultimately clear. The Taoiseach and the Department of Tourism said that they'd be working with the sector now in the next hours and days to try and come up with kind of set guidelines. But it appears, you know, like everything else when it comes to the hospitality sector, these people have been left with incredibly short notice for how they're supposed to plan for this. People need time, they have to make orders, they have to do rotas, there has to be shifts sorted and staff organised. And they've kind of been left now with around 72 hours to decide what they want to do. So it obviously has been met with a serious amount of consternation. There's also considerable issues now about concerts. They're saying the NPHET advice has been that if you're at a gig, the gigs have to be seated, but you can stand up and dance at your seat. It's all very confusing because there have already been tickets that have been sold for concerts that have standing capacity. So it's unknown now whether those concerts can actually go ahead or not. It's all very confusing. If you watched the press conference day with the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste, and Eamon Ryan, the journalists who were there, it was clear, you know, they had more questions than answers by the time it was over. And it was very clear, even from the way the Taoiseach was talking, that they hadn't really ironed out all the problems by the time they faced the press, but they knew they had to come out and face them anyway.
Yeah, Pauline O'Reilly, you have the short straw here tonight. as we say, the Taoiseach acknowledged and the Taoiseach acknowledged that there would be anomalies and there were things to be worked out here. But I was looking at representatives from the music industry and the nightclub industry on primetime before we came downstairs. And I mean, they have huge issues now in terms of just very basic things like they can't have full capacity now at gigs, presumably. If you're not allowed to have people standing, the people will have to be seated at these gigs. We saw that a press release came in this evening. It was for the biggest disco 90s. It was due to be held in the Three Arena this Saturday night. And we're told that this biggest disco, 90s disco, will go ahead. But in accordance with the new guidelines, it will be a fully seated event.
Look, I think from the very start of this pandemic, there have been anomalies. You know, let's be honest about it. And we are dealing with something of extraordinary proportions. I think that the government has got it right overall, but there are times where it is difficult to say, why can one sector do one thing and another do another thing? And the reason really, as I see it, going back through the last year and a half, is because you can't open up everything and then still hope to keep the numbers as they are. It means making choices, and it's.
But
not,
we are opening up everything now.
But we're opening up everything. But we're going back to continuing on with vaccine certs, continuing on with masks in certain circumstances. And we could just say, well, you know, let's do the same thing across the board. But actually, in the end of the day, we do have to look at our capacity in our hospitals. And that does drive a lot of these decisions. But I think it would have been the wrong thing to come out today for the hospitality sector with a fait accompli and to say to nightclubs, we've made all these decisions. So I think it is correct, actually, to work with the sector to come up with what is achievable. And no doubt some of those things will be ironed out. I would love to say they could have been ironed out before today. But I think we all were aware last week. I certainly was concerned. I was speaking to an awful lot of constituents who were very concerned that we were going to have a full reopening, no COVID certs, that the hospitality sector would see nobody coming through the doors because they were fearful. And also particularly older and more vulnerable people were worried about who was coming home to them and the fact that they may have been in venues where people were mixing and were not fully vaccinated.
I saw Leo Varadkar citing revised NPHET modelling today, saying that cases will probably peak around the end of October. Talking about this twin peak thing, which I'm very confused about that, because are we suggesting that we're at a peak now, it'll drop and it'll peak again? Where is the... Do you understand the twin peak?
Well, look, you know, I'm not Leo Varadkar and I can't explain exactly what Leo Varadkar, but I think, you know, It's fairly obvious that there is an addition, there is a peak happening at the moment and that we have to address. I'm not going to explain his exact words over twin peaks, and I think only Leo Varadkar could use a term like that. I certainly am not going to come up with that.
But the figures he was citing of this new NPHET modelling is likely to peak at 1,000 in mid-November. 1,000 hospitalizations in mid-November, and that ICU is now likely to peak at 150 to 200 cases at the end of November. Now, I'm not entirely sure, is that if we do all of this or if we do nothing? Do you understand that? Because it seems to me aiming for a scenario where we may hit 200 ICU beds taken up by COVID.
My understanding is if we didn't put in place these measures, I mean, that is my understanding. That's why we're putting in these measures.
Okay.
Obviously that you're not going to put in measures now and know that you've exceeded capacity. Otherwise, you'd put in more strengthened measures. We will have to see how things go, as indeed we have over the last couple of years.
In relation to hospitality, the government hasn't met with the representative groups of nightclubs as of yet. So the fact... That's incredible. That's, you know, these people are meant to rev up to some level of opening. There has been a crystallisation properly of the restrictions affecting them, and they haven't even been met with. And it's like, there's another anomaly. Like, for example, if a person that gets an extension on their pub, it means that everybody has to behave up until 12
o'clock. Yeah, table service until 12:30, is it?
And then they can go dance all around the same place in the same location to music. You can dance to a DJ, but you have to sit or stand to live music. And there's just and science shouldn't produce these anomalies. If we were following the science on this, it should be very clear what behaviours are allowed or not. I think for the difficulty for the government, I do think the government has been blindsided by this to a certain extent, because in fairness, Paul Reid did say back in August that if 80% of the population were vaccinated, we could fully reopen. Luke O'Neill even said on the radio just a couple of days ago that we're not sure why this is happening. And the truth of the matter is,
We know it's happening because Delta obviously has
proven a greater threat and challenge to
the vaccination program than had been anticipated.
Yeah, even with Delta, there was an expectation that such high levels of vaccination would reduce transmission from vaccinated people to vaccinated people.
But we are where we are now, Pather. You know, I mean, it's all very well saying that, but actually, we're responding.
And a government has to be responsive to what's in front of them. The real hole in the government's approach to this is a tool that's been used in most of the European countries that is very effective in actually reducing transmission, and that is antigen testing. And it is frustrating that RTE studios have been full for a year of government TDs saying they support antigen testing, they're looking into it, and yet we have had no material implementation of it at all. And even if you look at what's happening today, it actually requests that the Rapid Testing Advisory Group give a view on future antigen testing. It requests that that group does a feasibility study in relation to whether or not antigen testing can be introduced. This is a solid 12 months after other countries have.
I'm going to let you in, Darren, because I know you do want to come in. But Pauline, this, I think that is a very good question, because we had the Mark Ferguson report, then we understood there was this implementation group that was put in place to advise individual government departments and agencies on how to implement it. So why are we now looking for a view from them?
Well, as I understand it, it has started to be rolled out, antigen testing, and it has started over the summer. As far as I am aware, there are pilots in nursing homes.
Programs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but that is not rolling out an antigen program.
And look, and I think Pather's correct that there have been people who've come in and said that we support antigen testing, and I'm going to say the same thing, that I support antigen testing, and I genuinely do understand the frustration. I do believe it should have been rolled out before now, but I think it's really, really clear in what's come out today that this is the approach, and it is to increase the use of antigen tests. There are 2 million at the moment antigen tests, and they will be rolled
out. I want to ask you, but I do want to bring in Darren now, because you've been very patient. Darren O'Rourke.
Yeah, I think there was an element of Groundhog Day about. I think that was one of the newspaper headlines I saw, and the groundhog piece of it, in my opinion, is that you have a government with advance warning, but appears before the podium as if it's bounced into situation. There are a number of key elements I think that the government could have got right to prepare itself for today. For example, investment in the health services and increasing capacity there. It hasn't done that. There was clear signals and indications from right across the health service that capacity was needed. It isn't in place, and the budget didn't provide it. And then the other clear opportunity that was there was in terms of antigen testing. You know, go back to the fundamentals in relation to this. Investment in your health service, a test, trace, isolate, a testing strategy that includes PCR, but should have included antigen testing. We should have had widespread in the community. And I was in this studio before almost a year ago. It wasn't just the Mark Ferguson report. There was a HICRA report before Christmas. The Transport Committee dealt with this. Michael Mina from Harvard, if you remember, came out and was critical of NEFIT. And what all of those reports said was antigen testing is not perfect, but it has a role in a wider testing strategy. And all we heard from NEFIT and from others was the negative of antigen testing. They never looked at the opportunity that was there. And now they're telling us that they're looking at it at the 11th hour.
OK, can I ask you in relation to this extension of the COVID pass, where is Sinn Féin on this? Because we had your colleague Owen O'Brien on the Saturday programme, and he said he was quite negative about it, I would say, in saying that he felt that these were divisive and the sooner we got rid of them, the better. Where is Sinn Féin today on this decision to extend them?
Yeah, I think, and we had the legislation came through, I think it was in July. We were in a very different place. If you remember, the argument at that stage was in terms of...
No, I'm talking about Owen O'Brien last Saturday was saying that they were very divisive and as soon as we can get rid of them, the better.
Yeah, and I think that's the position, and I think there's an indication that Easter to be extended until January. But, you know, I hope at that stage we'll
so Sinn Féin supports the use of them in the current circumstances.
But I would say, yeah, and that's the public health advice. But I would say, you know, we argued in July that there's opportunity for, if you look at the digital COVID cert for aviation, it's a digital COVID cert, but it's not mandatory vaccination. It also includes an option of a PCR test or antigen test. And that's the type of system I would like to see, where we're not discriminating based on the vaccination status, and we're appropriately using the testing capacity that we have.
But would it, is it not, given that we now know that the 10% of adults who are not vaccinated are driving over 50% of the hospitalisations, is this not another tool in nudging more people towards vaccination? And is that, and if you're going to offer the antigen test, you lose that tool then?
Oh, no. Well, look, I think we also need that strategy in terms of encouraging people to.
And, well, you just threw it away there a second ago when you gave people the option of an antigen test.
No, we do have to, you know, and it's not just.
So which is the better one?
No, well, I think we have to see yet whether you know, it's going to be used as an encouragement. We don't yet know.
Well, I mean, if it's there and you have no other option, that's how it becomes an encouragement. If you give people another option, you're losing that tool. No.
Yeah, well, I don't think that in and of itself will be enough, because we already have indications that very many of the COVID cert checks are not happening in places. So, you know, we don't know to the degree to which the COVID cert has been implemented.
We do, don't we? We're told in a third of cases it's not being checked.
So that's a significant, you know, so we don't know of that third of cases.
Now, let's assume that people are now there's going to be a crackdown on this and people are going to be checking certs.
I'm not sure that's a fair assumption to make. So we don't know of that third of people that aren't being checked.
I'm just trying to get an answer for you in terms of, are we to use the use of the vaccine cert, the extension of it, to nudge more people, particularly younger people perhaps, towards getting vaccinations? Or should we be giving, is it more important to give people the option so we're not discriminating against people who are not vaccinated?
Well, our understanding is the public health advice is the position adopted by the government, and that's aligned with
the public. No, I'm asking you what does Sinn Féin agree with?
If that's the public health advice, we support.
Should
that
we be using it to nudge people towards vaccination, or should we be offering an alternative not discriminate against people? Which of those two, please?
I would like to hear from Tony Holohan why
you don't have a position on that.
The option of PCR and antigen testing
is not being offered.
We do have a position.
Which is?
We have yet to hear from Tony Holohan in relation to it.
What is your position, though?
Our position is we support the public health advice as is presented. So, but we would
That is not part of the public health advice. They haven't made a pronouncement on whether or not we should use it for that. So you're not taking a position until you hear what NPHET says.
In the absence of advice, we're supporting the position as it is. But I would say...
I don't know if you're deliberately not hearing me, Darren O'Rourke, or are you just deliberately...
I would ask Tony Holohan why the option that's good enough for international travel is not good enough for access to facilities.
Okay, I'm just going to bring in Aoife Moore on this. Aoife, this issue about the extension of the COVID certs, we all know when they were introduced first, everyone threw their hands in there and said, oh my God, this is unworkable, it's going to be terrible, how can we discriminate against people who haven't been vaccinated? But now, you know, the industry itself seems to be quite happy to use them if it means they can stay open. But do you think it will be used as a tool to try and encourage more people to get vaccinated?
Yeah, the point was made to me today, and I actually thought it was a good one, that if it ends up that nightclubs can only reopen for for vaccinated people, it might encourage students, people who are back at college who have not yet been vaccinated and who want to go out with their friends, might go and get vaccinated. Anecdotally, I know before the Republic brought in our vaccine passports, the girl who does my eyebrows refused to get her vaccine. And then the next thing I heard that she wanted to go out in Donegal, so she went and got her vaccine.
And tell me, were you comfortable getting your eyebrows plucked by somebody who didn't have a vaccine?
Yeah, well, it was already too late. I was on the chair by the time she told me.
Okay.
But I would say, listen, I think the hospitality sector has been backed on the corner. I think, you know, it's been 18 months with people not having a lot of work or not having any work at all, and they will take what they can get when it comes to reopening. And I think what we're going to see now is, I think if people haven't got their vaccine yet, I don't know how much more persuading that they're going to need. I mean, there might be a few stragglers that might go along now because they want to go out or they want to travel. But I think if people have made up their mind this far, it's going to be hard to convince them whether they can go out to a nightclub or not.
Okay, Pather, you're dying to jump in there.
The question is what's more effective?
Now, you're very critical of
I am. I oppose the vaccine passports. I do think it is discriminatory. I think all citizens should have equal rights, and nobody's rights should be dependent upon a decision. They should be guaranteed by the Constitution and the law. But it's also a question of what's
should
more effective.
If we take that to its logical, should babies be taken for their vaccination, then their 6 month shots and their...
I would also point out that going to a nightclub is not a right.
Aoife was just saying, if you leave that on, Aoife is just saying there that going into a nightclub isn't a right, isn't a human right.
No, but I fully support vaccines. I think vaccines are very useful.
But you're okay with us giving babies vaccines because obviously rights are not being inquired into when we give them their vaccines.
We've no problem with vaccines. It's the denial of a right and whether or not the decision has been taken to take the vaccine or not that I have the problem with. So that's based on a number of reasons. But I will say the first reason is because I can go into a pub tomorrow. I'm vaccinated. I can have COVID and I can spread COVID to the people around me. If I have an antigen test which shows I don't have COVID, I won't spread the COVID to anybody else. So COVID is actually a more useful tool to stop the transmission of the illness. An antigen test, apologies. And that's why countries such as Denmark that have lower rates of vaccination, that have lower rates of COVID, are successful because they have introduced masked antigen testing, and that's like, and I think that's one of the problems with the government's approach, and that's why they're being blindsided. They haven't allowed for the fact that actually COVID is spreading amongst the vaccinated in the manner that it is, and that's one of the issues that is driving the figures.
Yeah, can I ask Pauline? Have you any sense now? And I don't expect you to have the answer to this right now, but I think a lot of people out there will be asking this question. If not now, when? In terms of lifting all of the restrictions, because. Or I suppose a better way to put that is, what is the exit strategy now? We have done everything we can. We've had an extraordinarily successful vaccination campaign, hugely bought into by the citizenry in general. And we have still a lot of people wearing masks. We have, even if it's being flouted in some places, we have the COVID certainly. And still, we are looking at these numbers today where 473 people in hospital, 74 of them in ICU. And that graph is going very dangerously almost a vertical direction. So,
but I mean, we are in an exit strategy. We're not in lockdown, as you pointed out earlier on. We're not actually in lockdown. And
well, now tell that to some of the hospitality people who are wondering if their business is going to go belly up.
But I can tell you though that people in the hospitality sector do not want what Pather is talking about, which is to have no vaccine certs. Not anybody I've spoken to, and certainly, you know, if we're talking about people's rights, there's also the right of those at home who people are going home to. It's not a simple case of I should have a right to go anywhere I want. Actually, it does have an impact on those around you. And I think you're absolutely right. We have to think of civil liberties, but it has to be proportionate. And we have to think about this is actually about public health. You know, it's about the public. It's about public benefit. And that's why we're making the decisions that we are.
The facts are that people at home will be better protected if the person coming home to their house was actually antigen tested before they actually went to the pub than on the basis of a vaccine passport. Because
what if somebody doesn't want to take an antigen test either? I mean, like, where does that end?
Well, first of all,
these matters, we are rolling out antigen testing. So that argument that you've been talking about for a long time, you need to move it on now because antigen testing is happening.
I won't move it on because I'll be honest. This is one of the most frustrating aspects of this whole process. You said that they're rolling it out. They're not. There are six pilot programs at the moment, and you say with regards the hospitality sector.
Did you not get a sense, though, Pather Tobin, that there was a shift in that today,
because the
ground,
as I said,
has moved on that.
It was marginal. There were three elements within Neffet's advice. The first one was that people who are close contacts and asymptomatic, that they will be tested, which is a positive. But the other two were only seeking views and only seeking feasibility still.
Yeah, sorry. In that first one, I would say, am I right in saying that the idea is that if you are a close contact but you're asymptomatic, that you're going to get an antigen test in the post. All I could think of was Joe Jacob and the iodine tablets. Is that an efficient way to approach close contact tracing?
Well, look, I mean, that is what was said today. I don't think it's inefficient personally, because, you know, it is a method of getting it to people, and actually very fast. So
what do you do for when you're waiting for the post to come? Do you stay at home?
Well, really, I mean, you post something today, it arrives tomorrow. So I don't think staying at home till tomorrow is really a huge...
So you do stay at home? I mean, I'm just wondering, is that the advice? Because
they could have pushed it through the pharmacies very easily, you could actually get a pharmacist to do it in a structured manner, which, you know, I know Neffet had a problem with people self-testing, and pharmacies would have actually cleared that issue.
There's a lot of different methods that could be and still can be used, but I don't think, you know, it's the thing that's going to really impact on the rollout.
Yeah, I think what's becoming clearer and clearer is that the advice is not clear. We don't know what's happening. And also the notion that you would sit in the house and wait for an antigen test to be posted out to you if you have to go to work the next day and pay rent is also not feasible for thousands of people across Ireland.
I'm going to let you in. I just want to read a few of the texts coming in because I did ask our listeners to text. Time was only parish priest demanded social distancing at dances, says Brendan and Tralee. This is a tweet from Sean. So the virus now knows not to transmit when eating, drinking and dancing. It's laughable that you think we can wear masks going to the toilets and that makes it safe. Even another listener has texted, will the government have to bring forward new legislation to extend COVID certs into February 22? Do we know that?
I believe that we will have to probably extend legislation.
Yeah, because I think just in place until we thought it was.
But look,
lifted.
I mean, we put through 62 pieces of legislation.
That's not going to be a problem.
Last year, it's really not going to be a problem.
Okay, let's have a grown-up debate. Finally, says another listener. That's Caroline in Dublin. It's not discrimination to require that people are vaccinated to do certain things. Vaccination is a personal choice, but choices have consequences. And here's one. Working in a restaurant, grand and happy to continue having the certs in place, but I found out today that the chef is an anti-vaxxer and he is cooking all the food with no mask and no vaccine. What's the point in the customers being vaccinated if the chef can go around like that, says another listener. Darren.
Yeah, I just want to come back. Like, what's clear in relation to the conversation here is that we don't have a coherent and clear testing strategy and how we're going to use antigen testing. And we could have been building that for 12 months at this stage. I appreciate and understanding and read between the lines in terms of what Neffet have been saying to us. But now we've arrived at a point where it's actually farcical, some of what you're hearing from government in terms of, posting out antigen tests, like the logistics of that, how that is going to be used. And also, you know, not availing, using antigen tests as an opportunity to give people some freedom. And also, you know, in doing that, building up the case and the evidence base for the use of antigen testing itself. Instead, we're in the middle of October, looking into the winter months with huge pressure on our health services, with flu and whatever else, winter vomiting bug or whatever it is coming around the corner. And we have no evidence base, despite report after report, for the use of antigen testing.
Yeah, and we're still talking about the evidence base there. I just want to ask one question in relation to, it was in the letter from Neffet to the minister, and Leo Varadkar also referred to it in the press conference today, that the idea of stopping now and not lifting the remaining restrictions was considered. But because they decided that there wasn't going to be any conceivable change in the next number of weeks and the next couple of months, that they decided to go ahead anyway. There was no point, because if you stop now, you wouldn't realistically be able to say we'll be able to open up in November, because that would be unlikely looking at the way the modelling is going. That just seems to be an extraordinary... The logic of that is lost on me, that we're not stopping now. We're going to go ahead and open now because we wouldn't be able to do it in a few weeks if we didn't do it now.
But I mean, there are measures being put in. It's not a simple case of we're just going ahead with the original plan despite the numbers. Yeah, that's not actually where we are.
Look at our number. We're giving up on limits on the numbers at weddings. They're being lifted. Religious ceremonies, no limits there anymore. Sporting events are going ahead. And like looking at that big report they had in the UK where they've been trying to figure out where did they go wrong. And by God, they have gone wrong. And I think that's indisputable. One of the key issues there, going through that data, what was driving up the numbers was a surge in the numbers of people attending big crowded events.
Well, now, look, I mean, we do have a job in government, and that is to balance everything and to have an understanding of how much more can people take of something. And I think that has to be factored into every decision
that's
made.
But, that has been mentioned every time along the way when kind of half measures have been taken, when things haven't gone the full way, when the advice of NPHET wasn't fully followed. But every single time we go back and ask people what they think, it turns out that actually the general populace are more cautious than the government, what the government did. At every turn, it has been discovered that.
The general population were probably in favour of more opening up last Christmas. And I think
that wasn't what the data showed, actually.
Well, maybe that is just the general feeling that I was getting at the time.
Because there was a lot of noise in the media.
Yeah, possibly. But also, you know, the people that I met in my own constituency. And people could have made the choice at that time not to go and meet. It was each person's individual choice. And I think what we found was that people were going and meeting.
Because they were told it was safe.
But I think that what we also said was, you know, that that there does have to be an element of people's personal responsibility. So if people have an understanding that they don't feel safe, then they would make a different choice. So I think it's not as straightforward as that.
I suppose what I'm asking is, there's a line in that NPHET letter where it says that NPHET cautions that the reimposition of public health restrictive measures may be warranted should the application of the above measures not have sufficient effect on the profile of the disease. So it's basically the reimposition of public health measures. So that is saying we may have to take a step back here. And I'm just wondering, is there a fear in government circles that we're taking a punt here and we could be back at the, will we be having a meaningful Christmas in another month or two?
Well, you know, things have changed with this pandemic. They change all of the time. So we do have to be responsive. Like, I certainly get the feeling that we know we're going to have to be responsive on an ongoing basis. So there's absolutely that thought is there that you're going to have to be responsive on an ongoing basis. But I think, like, to go back to some of the points previously about, like Darren was talking there about having to wait for NPHET advice in relation to whether or not to continue with COVID certs. And yet we're trying to follow NPHET advice in relation to antigen tests, but everybody seems to have a problem with that. So there's a balance all of the time. We're taking the medical advice, including in relation to antigen tests. And yes, not all of us were happy enough to go along with all that medical advice, but it's still a balance that, you know, we have to do because we are in government. It's easy to be in opposition
One weakness I think that the government have had as well is that the dial hasn't been shifted with regards hospital capacity. I do think we're going to be living with COVID for a while, unfortunately. I do think it's going to be an element in our future. And hospital capacity is the front line of the fight against COVID. In the hospital that serves actually Darren's constituency and my constituency, the government are actively looking to close the ICU beds and the A&E beds at the moment. Orthopaedic services were closed today because of the pressure on those A&Es. There is still something wrong with the HSE and the government's attitude towards capacity. We need to be extending capacity to the same level of ICU beds per person
as Denmark
and Germany.
But is there a very basic issue there in that the recruitment is a huge issue there in terms of the kind of skilled people we need to staff a single bed, a single ICU bed. Where are we going to get those people?
Recruitment is important, and recruitment depends on two things. It depends on wage and conditions. And if wage and conditions improve in this country, we'll be able to compete with other countries. Remember, we spent 41 billion euros on COVID-related costs in the last 2 years. We spent twice the European average on COVID-related costs. If we had a stronger health service, we would have been able to follow the lockdown trend of Germany and Denmark. We would have been able to allow for the economy to operate for longer. It would have cost less there. So there's actually a fool's economy with regards the route the government is taking.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I wanted to make a point in relation to Pauline's comment in relation to antigen testing, because NPHET came before the Transport Committee on a number of occasions, as far back as last October. And what they specifically said, and it was a PRIGRA formula awards, was that it's up to individual sectors, individual ministers to provide an evidence base that antigen testing could be used. They didn't say we're outright against it. They didn't go that far, but they said there isn't an evidence base that it can be used. So it's up to the government, up to individual ministers, up to individual sectors to provide that evidence base. And they did. They weren't proactive and they didn't do it. And as a result of that, we find ourselves in the middle of October without that and wondering how we can use this as a tool. And I just think that's quite unforgivable.
Yeah, I think that is, and it goes back to the question I asked you, Pauline, earlier, the exit strategy. Like, we've pulled all the levers now, basically, apart from a rolled out antigen testing regime. There isn't a clear exit strategy, is there?
Well, I think what we're all saying, and including Padraig himself said it, that we know that this pandemic is going to be with us for a while. So it is about living with it. And I wish I could say it's all going to be over next week. But I don't think any of us feel that.
I don't want anyone you can't ask anyone, obviously, to predict where a pandemic is going to go. But I'm saying, what is the next plan? If you know, we need a plan here. We can't wait until the weather changes. If that's the plan, tell us that's the plan. But I don't really see we're being told that we're going to deal with a situation where we have 90% of adults, or over 90% of adults.
Well, I think
vaccinated.
what's very clear here is that what, you know, many of us have thought should happen in relation to antigen tests is happening. That we are. Well, I know Patrick.
Well,
hang on.
Stephen
Donnelly.
I'm told that Stephen Donnelly said in the Dáil this week that there is nothing stopping individual departments introducing antigen testing.
Imagine being in government and saying that there's nothing stopping somebody else doing something.
I think it was quite clear from the Taoiseach's comments today that we're moving in the direction of antigen testing rollout, and that there's 2 million antigen tests ready. So I do think that that is happening, and you know, that is part of the strategy clearly, and also that we're not actually mixing with unvaccinated people when we decide to go out at night, and we're not bringing that home. But that is part of the strategy. A couple of weeks ago, we thought that we'd be opening up. I think a lot of us were very fearful. I know for certain, most people I know, we're not going to go inside a restaurant. So that does change things.
The exit strategy question is very pertinent. Waterford has one of the highest levels of vaccination in the state, and has one of the highest levels of COVID in the state as well. There's about 3% who are unvaccinated in Waterford. So right now, for that location, you could say the government's only strategy really to bring down COVID rates there is to try to push those 3% over the line with regards vaccination, or not allow them to access hospitality. And the truth of the matter is, the facts that we're seeing show that we need another tool in our armory to beat this. And you said that, you know, the government is talking about the antigen word, but there's no concrete evidence of material change in these plans today.
Catherine Motherway said today about mandatory vaccination for frontline patients facing staff? Is that a step too far? Darren?
I think it is. I think from my understanding, and speaking to colleagues who work in the health service, there's already an element moving staff away if they aren't vaccinated, in terms of shifts and rosters and positions. So I think that the HSE are well able to manage risk and they conduct their risk assessments. And I think going down the line of mandatory vaccination, I think is, you know,
if I'm being shifted out of my position, is that not a discriminatory?
My understanding
issue
is that that's already happening within
and should it be happening
of the HSE? Well, again, it's if the risk assessment indicates that it's appropriate, I think that's the basis on which we do. But I going back to the point in terms of an exit strategy in relation to this, I'm not sure that that's part of it. But I think what is part of it is investment in our hospital system, and you can see it. Like, the Irish Hospital Consultants Association met a couple of weeks ago. Nurses were out protesting outside Connolly Hospital. last week. There's threats of cuts, as Pádraig mentioned, at Navan Hospital and elsewhere. There isn't sufficient increased capacity, like 19 additional ICU beds are provided for in the government's budget. That's nowhere near far enough, I would say. And it was, a famous position, that we had for a long time in terms of hospital beds per head of population. We're one of the lowest in the European Union. And those things really matter. And so that really matters. A real and comprehensive testing and tracing and proper strategy in relation to that. And I think you look at ventilation in schools, the opportunities are there to go further than we have done. And the government have come up short time and again and okay. then wonder why we find ourselves in situations like this.
OK, just the last few and then we'll have to move on. I have an email here. Great to find out on the news and online that GPs are rolling out the over 60s booster jab as if we're not overwhelmed enough. Well, this is obviously from a GP. Can't wait for that surgery phone line to open tomorrow morning, they say. Is it now a case of the nation looking after the health service or vice versa, says John. And finally, I'm 36 and not vaccinated. I feel like I'm being discriminated against. Anyone of my family and friends who is vaccinated could pass it to myself or anyone else. Well, I suppose that's your point, Pádraig. We will leave that there, but no doubt there is much more to discuss.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, earlier today, opposition TDs called for the National Assets Management Agency to be removed from the housing market following a story in this weekend's Business Post that found that they had left 26 apartments in Finglas in North County Dublin empty for more than a decade. Pádraig, are you across this story?
Yeah, I've read the Business Post story there, and I also heard the facts that about at least 8,000 homes potentially every year could be provided on a cost basis.
Yeah, this is Dr. Rory Hearn writing in the Examiner, I think it was yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah,
that's right. And the Taoiseach answered this question today, and it was just one of those phenomenal situations where the Taoiseach said that NAMA couldn't get involved in the provision of social housing in the way that the Dáil probably wanted to do it because the legislation underpinned a certain mandate, and the mandate was to protect the taxpayers with regards making sure that
they got the best possible
deal from the banking crisis.
I think we might. Do we have that clip? Yeah, let's hear what the Taoiseach said when he was asked about this today.
Now, in respect of NAMA, it has very specific legislative underpinning. There is an issue in terms of how, as it evolves, as time evolves, how we interact with NAMA in terms of using its capacity to add to the state's endeavours already under Housing for All in terms of the provision of housing. And that's something that will be under ongoing review.
Yeah, so that was the Taoiseach responding to that question. Just as this piece by Rory Hearn in the Irish Examiner said that NAMA had the land and finance to build 80,000 homes, but that they are committed to what they say is a statutory obligation, as the Taoiseach said there, to get the biggest bang for their buck on sales. Are you across this story, Aoife?
Yeah, and I was just reading there. It also states in the NAMA Act that the agency has the objective to contribute to the social and economic development of the state. I, as I think it was Richard Boyd Barrett said in the Dáil today, that the Sunday Business Post story just proved to us what we all already knew. We knew that NAMA was sitting, maybe not as on as many as it was revealed, but we knew NAMA was sitting on these. I mean, every time I feel like I come on the Late Debate, I'm asked about housing and I feel more and more hopeless as a young person. Every time I come on it, you will hear there'll be another story, whether it's cuckoo funds buying blocks of houses, whether it's NAMA, and the next thing, it seems to be more and more bad news. And in the immediate future, no good news. You know, we had Housing for All, which should have been announced a much fanfare, which is completely overshadowed by the Catherine Zapone affair. And I don't feel, and none of my friends feel any closer to buying a house. And then you read these stories about NAMA with a finance to build 80,000 homes, an arm of the state, and the Taoiseach saying that, well, no, because in the Act that technically they can't do that.
Pauline.
Yeah, look, I mean, as I understand it from listening to the Taoiseach today on it, he's being factually correct. That's what the legislation says. So that's, to be fair to the Taoiseach, that's what he's saying. He's not saying that the legislation won't be changed.
But it's not today or yesterday that we realised that there was this And this was the interpretation NAMA took from the legislation.
I mean, I've canvassed for years and I know what people say on the doors, and in every house you go to, there is a different story in relation to housing that is heartbreaking. And then you read things like this and you wonder what has been happening. And, you know, an agency set up like that, that's really set up to try to get the best value for money. I will say this, though. I mean, last year we put through more housing legislation than anything else. I mean, I was sitting through hours and hours of housing legislation.
I know, but you've got a state agency sitting on the capacity to deliver huge help to that. Housing, stated government initiative.
Look, absolutely. But I do think it is important to say, though, and I'm not denying that, but I do think it is important to say that there may have been a reason for that at one point, but now that's no longer good enough.
There is no plan by the government to change the legislation underpinning NAMA. That's the first thing. And the Taoiseach blamed that legislation. He is the government. They can change that legislation.
He's not quite blaming the legislation. He's been factually correct, he didn't say he wasn't going to change the legislation.
He has all the opportunity to change the legislation. And secondly, he said he was doing it to protect the taxpayer. The state is paying RAS
and TAP for
70,000 families at the moment. We're paying private landlords rent every single week for 70,000 families. That's not protecting the taxpayer in this country. I honestly believe there's
you can't just pull the rug over 70,000 people either.
You can repurpose NAMA to suit the needs of the time, and there is no plan by the government to do that.
Well, look, we've been in government for just over a year, and actually, like, there's more money invested in housing this year than there has been since 2008. Actually, like, you know,
when you see that, this is not a big revelation. This emerges every so often. The people kind of look sideways and go, "Oh my God, look at NAMA over there! What are they doing with all the land and assets that they have been charged with keeping?" And they're out of the gap now in terms of, you know, stripping, you know, the job that they had to do. They're now in the black.
Yeah, but there was a reason. I mean, but let's be clear, there was a reason for it to be done like that at one point. I do think that we're in a different place. I think the Taoiseach today acknowledged that we were in a different place.
He didn't give any hint that it was going to be repurposed. He said it was being kept under review. Yeah, Aoife.
I look forward to this new legislation that we're apparently going to get, that the Taoiseach's going to be changing what NAMA stands for in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, no, I didn't detect any move towards new. Did you, Darren?
No, not at all. And I was in the chamber at the time. I heard it exactly as the Taoiseach said it, and it was quite incredible. And I think any of us that have been following NAMA over the years watched with interest and looked at the potential opportunity that was there to play a really important role in addressing the housing crisis, and it never materialised. I remember as a member of the local authority, you would ask questions in terms of how many units, you know, were made available to the local authority. It was always a tiny number. There were nearly more rejected than there were taken on. But the thing it says to me, and it's almost a case in point, is our housing crisis is manufactured. It's a direct result of decisions made by successive governments. It is resolvable, but we have to tackle those underlying issues. And this government doesn't seem intent on tackling them. They're responding to a piece of work by Dr. Rory Ahern and a piece in The Examiner. The government didn't come out and set out a plan to address this. They still haven't set out a plan to address this. We've seen it time and again in terms of vulture funds, in terms of investment funds, how they have facilitated.
But NAMA are doing, as I say, and you know, to give NAMA their due, they're doing what they were told to do. They're doing what the legislation sets out they should do. It says that they have to obtain, this is from Brendan McDonagh, chairman of NAMA, before the Public Accounts Committee in September. He said that they have to obtain the best achievable financial return for the state, and they are obliged to get the best price in sales and can only finance developments that they expect to yield a profit in compliance with state aid rules. So that drives them into the arms of cuckoo funds and investment funds and the people who have the money to pay the big bucks.
They're selling 2 and 3 bedroom apartments for €525,000 in the city. And that's exactly where they're driven because of the mandate that they are given. But government have the opportunity to address that, but they don't do that. And that's the fundamental, because
I sense strongly that Pauline is agreeing with you silently here in the corner, and she's afraid to say it out loud.
Affordable housing to people in need.
To be fair and to put balance into this, because actually, you know, in relation to housing, it's not correct to say that the government are ideologically opposed.
Listen, hold on a second.
Now, the 5,000 homes in Q2 of 2021 were completed, and it's record budgets, and we're talking about 300,000 in the next 10 years.
It's record homelessness. You know, of course it needs record budgets.
And you should double capital investment in
housing, like Sinn Féin proposed you would do, and to deliver 20,000 social and affordable houses next year. But government are coming up short. And the truth of it is, people are living with this. You know, Aoife has given an example there of herself. There's tens of thousands across the country, and they don't see the solution.
You don't need to tell me people are living with it. But we're actually in government delivering, and as I said, record amount of legislation. And you do have to set out the legislation in order to be able to achieve these things. We have cost rental for the first time ever, which will give people cheaper homes. We have more social housing than has been delivered in a long time. I'm not going to defend previous governments. It's not my job, and it's certainly not where I come from. And I believe that this Housing for All has 218 different steps in it. And look, everything will not be done overnight. I share the frustration because
there is an ideological problem with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. There's no doubt about that.
But not the Greens?
Well, I honestly think the Greens are focused on their particular agenda, and they're sitting out the issue, the economic issues and the housing issues. And I'll just give you an example of the ideological blocks. Look at the vacant site tax, which is green policy. €21,000 last year. The vacant site tax costs more to draft and to implement than actually received in a particular year. Any government that does that is not in business with regards to changing. It was Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and that's the point that I'm making. The zoned land tax, that's not happening for another three years. That's not an urgency. There's an urgency deficit in the government with regards to fixing this crisis.
Okay, we've got to take a break because we want to do get onto that issue that the Greens are very focused on. We just have a few minutes left, so we'll take a break.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And just before we leave that question of NAMA, a listener has sent us in a story which was originally published on the 14th of September 2009. And it's from your former, the former Green Party leader, John Gormley, who was at that point calling for the agency to have a social remit so communities across the country could benefit from its operation. And at the time, Finance Minister Brian Lennon said that it was fundamental that NAMA protect the taxpayer. And he said that would have been at the core of all the amendments to the legislation so far. But Mr. Gormley said he would press for further measures in NAMA legislation that would promote a social dividend. And that was 12 years ago.
Well, look, I'll be pressing for it now. So.
Okay, very quickly, the Oireachtas obviously goes on a break next week for the midterm. But then the world leaders will gather in Glasgow for COP26, the annual UN climate conference, to discuss climate control measures over the next decade. In the Dáil, backbenchers in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are saying that they will oppose cuts to agricultural emissions if they affect farmers. And this is obviously to do with the carbon budgets. How are you going to get around this, Pauline?
I think everybody is aware, and certainly all of government, and maybe there might be a few stragglers, but to be fair, everybody is aware across society that we need to cut emissions. But cutting emissions can happen in a variety of ways. And, you know, if some of the leaks are anything to go by in relation to carbon budgets, I think that it's fair to say that agriculture is probably going to
get off quite lightly, lighter
than some of the others, because we know that we can do a lot in energy in particular. If you look at really underutilised wind energy off the West Coast, for instance, transport, 2-1, we've said now in the NDP in relation to active and public transport. So there is a huge amount that can be done there. But agriculture won't get off scot-free, because that's the reality for all of us. And it's about really incentivizing and ensuring that people get paid and that, that there's a just transition for farmers. And like fundamentally, we believe in the Green Party that farmers are the custodians of the land. Where I am in the west of Ireland, it's particularly small farmers who I believe have been let down for quite a long time. You know, they're not intensive farmers, and actually a lot of land has held like that. So it is about supporting people who are actually, you know, sequestering carbon on their land to re-wet our bogs and so on and
okay.
so forth.
We're nearly up against it. So very quickly, Pather.
Yeah, just two things. There is no feed-in tariff yet for microgeneration of electricity in the state. And we're the last country in Europe for that to happen. And the second thing, with regards to carbon tax, it is hitting rural societies far more. There should be a carbon tax plus market price ceiling. So if the market price reaches a certain level, that there isn't this punitive element of carbon tax as well. The idea of carbon tax is to reach a price that pushes people away from the fossil fuel. But if inflation has already achieved that, throwing a carbon tax on top of that is only hurting people. It's not actually for any purpose.
So you don't believe in carbon tax?
Well, I think there's a place for carbon tax, but I think
it is all ring fenced for the people who are most likely to be impacted.
The idea of a carbon tax being implemented on people, irrespective of the circumstance and irrespective of the price of fuel.
You have 30 seconds, Darren O'Rourke.
Yeah, I think the debate on climate is in a toxic place at the minute, and I think that's because people feel that climate change is being done to them, not with them. And that's as a result of government action. I think people need to see the
positive.
People need to see the
positives
of it. People, they see the carbon tax delivered year after year and committed for 10 years. They don't see new public transport. They don't see retrofitting houses. They don't see electric vehicles being available to them. They don't see any of that in a reality. And I can name communities across County Meath that had better public services, public transport services, decades ago. And this government is failing to deliver.
Okay, I have to deliver an end to this, unfortunately. Thank you all, the panel, for coming in to me tonight, and thank you all for listening out there. Producer tonight was Penny Hart, research was Andrew Fleming, BCO's Elaine Conlon, and Kieran Dunn was on sound. Stay tuned for Late Date with Fachna O'Brien on. But first, we will hand over to Siobhan Madigan on the Sports Desk.